From WBUR in Boston, it's Weekly Warm-Up, a sampling of the cornucopia of stories and interviews featured on Only a Game, sports public radio style.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the all-new turbocharged Acura RDX with available voice-activated navigation. More at acura.com/RDX.
Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
This is Only a Game. I'm Bill Littlefield.
Opening day 2007, scorecard roster lineup.
Opening day at Fenway Park is always a big deal, so it was no surprise that on April 10th, a couple of hours before the Red Sox would play the Seattle Mariners, there were already lots of reporters, photographers, and TV camera crews on the field. I asked one of the journalists, who identified himself as Keach, whether he felt that he and the other writers and photographers were competing with each other.
I don't think so. We are, you know, we're family. Japanese family, big family.
Big is right. On this particular opening day, more than half of the throng was Japanese. Keach represents Sports Nippon, a Japanese daily, and he was in Boston to write about Ichiro Suzuki, the Mariners' star outfielder. One of Keach's countrymen, Yoshi, who works for what he calls the Japanese equivalent of MajorLeagueBaseball.com, had his sights set on another Japanese player.
Everyone wants news about Daisuke, you know, which is so much important right now. But Daisuke is so friendly, you know, to Japanese media, because when he played high school, you know, so much media and fans, you know, chasing his pitching and also his high school life.
Daisuke, or Daisuke, last name Matsuzaka, is the pitcher who's under contract to the Red Sox for $52 million, the team having paid Mr. Matsuzaka's former employer, the Cebu Lions, $51 million for the opportunity to negotiate with the pitcher. On opening day at Fenway, there was much excitement about what would transpire the following evening when the $103 million man would face Seattle's Ichiro, who was the American League's Rookie of the Year and Most Valuable Player in 2001 and has won 6 Gold Gloves and led the league in hits 3 times.
Tomorrow, national hero against national hero. That's why. Arguably, Ichiro is top player in the world. So Daisuke will be top pitcher in the world. You know, that's why, you know, Japanese people, you know, so much attention right now. Yeah.
The Red Sox have responded to that attention in various ways, such as by providing tours of the ballpark in Japanese. At the souvenir store across the street from the ballpark, the attention has been constant and profitable, thanks to the availability of a variety of Daisuke shirts.
The proof's in the pudding. When you do look up at the shirts, you see that we do have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different types of shirt. The closest person even coming to that would be 3 different types of shirts.
Robert Petillo has been selling Daisuke stuff to customers of various nationalities.
I mean, he's what they call, what is it, the treasure of Japan and stuff. You know, a lot of the guys come in here, you know, unfortunately, don't even know what nationality he is. But when it comes to tourists, I mean, they gobble it up. I mean, everybody is just scooping it up. I mean, I would say 80% of our sales is Asian.
2 weeks after Daisuke lost that first start at Fenway Park, a game in which Ichiro went 0-for-5, the enthusiasm of Japanese fans in Boston remains strong. Aaron Nauman, the community outreach coordinator at Showa Boston, an institute that serves visiting Japanese students studying English, says Daisuke mania has changed everything.
My phone didn't stop ringing all day today, if that's any indication. We felt like we were this hidden jewel for a long time, and now, you know, Boston's just gone Japanese culture crazy.
Evidence for this contention is everywhere in the city. Restaurants and bars have added Japanese food to their menus and posted signs in Japanese welcoming Daisuke to town. Still, according to Aaron Nauman, those most excited about the advent of the era of Daisuke in Boston may be the fans who used to cheer for him in Japan. When Daisuke faced Ichiro at Fenway Park, the pitcher appeared to be the favored Japanese player among the Japanese fans at Showa.
The first game was great because it was happening during the day. We actually pulled our students from class. There's only 34 of them, but they're the most energetic 34 students you've ever seen. They're university students. They've been in Boston since September, so they were really psyched. And I think they were a little bit feeling homesick, so this whole focus on Japanese culture, I think, has helped them.
That focus has also helped a specific, rather high-end branch of the tourism business to explode.
We estimated that there will be about 10,000 additional Japanese visitors coming to Boston and Cambridge because of the Daisuke Matsuzaka signing. And these will be visitors that will be buying tour packages.
That's Pat Moscarliatolo of the Greater Boston Convention and Visitors Bureau. He's been impressed with how popular the packages being offered to Japanese baseball fans who want to visit Boston for a few days of baseball have proved to be.
What these packages involve at this point, obviously the airfare, the hotel, the 4 to 5 night stay, those packages were selling retail for $3,500. They had 300 packages to sell because they were able to package them up with the tickets, so they had 300 tickets. They sold out in less than 3 days. The demand is just off the charts. And if Fenway, if there were another 10,000, 15,000 seats in the ballpark, I'm sure that they would have had triple the number of packages to sell.
Of course, Japanese players have been succeeding as members of Major League Baseball teams for some time. Ichiro Suzuki is in his seventh season with the Mariners, who also pay catcher Kenji Joijima $6 million a year for his services. Hideki Matsui has a batting average of .297 over the past four seasons with the New York Yankees. The defending champion St. Louis Cardinals employ So Taguchi in their outfield. But the arrival of Daisuke Matsuzaka has unquestionably upped the ante. The extent to which the golden child, celebrity, and multimillionaire pitcher will help his current employer remain in first place in the American League East remains to be seen, but his arrival at Fenway Park has certainly changed the look, the feel, and the marketing strategies of baseball in Boston.
Best sausage, hot pizza, sushi here.
This weekend in Union City, California, the Sikh Sports Association will hold its first annual sports tournament. There are 500,000 Sikhs in the United States, with 50,000 living in California alone. This weekend, along with Bay Area residents of all backgrounds, Sikhs will compete in field hockey, soccer, basketball, volleyball, wrestling, tennis, cricket, track and field, and one sport with which listeners may be less familiar. Only a Game's Karen Given recently traveled to Northern California, and she has this report.
About 30 miles southeast of San Francisco, 19-year-old Sabi Santar waits in Union City's Contempo Park. It's a heavily overcast day, and his team has decided to cancel practice. But he's still here, hoping someone will show up for a scrimmage, and happy to talk about his favorite sport, kabaddi. At least I think that's what it's called.
It's called kabaddi.
Kabaddi.
Yeah, kabaddi. There you go.
Okay.
It's K-A-B-A-D-D-I.
Shooting hoops and chatting on his cell phone, Sabi looks a lot like any other American teenager. He's not the type I expected to find playing a traditional Punjabi sport.
I was born in California, actually. I played basketball, football, run track, and then my uncle was like, you should join the sport. You know, you're talented. You know, you'll do good. And so I just joined it. I started loving the game.
Sabi has been playing kabaddi for 3 years now. He's going to school to become a radiologist, which makes his parents happy. But if Sabi has his way, he'll spend the next 15 years or so as a professional kabaddi player. In Manteca, a small community in the San Joaquin Valley south of Sacramento, seven guys are stripping down to their shorts and stretching before a very windy kabaddi practice. They throw a few shoes in a semicircle to signify out of bounds, but then they get a little confused about how large the semicircle should be.
Hey, how many feet are the 100?
I don't know. I think like 40 or 50?
It's a good thing Amo Singh, a volunteer for kabaddi.org, is on hand. He tells the players where to place their shoes. Four guys, called stoppers, line up on the curved side of the semicircle and link arms, waiting for another player, called a raider, to cross over. The raider will try to tag one and only one of the stoppers and run back to his side of the boundary. The stopper will try, as you might expect, to stop the raid by any means possible. He'll tackle the raider, wrestle him, or attempt to throw him to the ground. Think Duck Duck Goose, but, well, semi-naked and much more violent. And as Amo explains, with a time limit.
He's got 30 seconds to touch one of these guys and come back.
Okay.
And they'll start a little bit more further up, and they'll move back, because they want to waste that time as much as they can. Because it's hard for him to keep an eye on all four players. So, you know, they'll be moving around. They'll try to curve around this way, and then he'll try to get in a position where you can see him better. And then they'll make noises. They'll throw some fakes. One guy might throw a dive to distract him, and another guy might jump on top of him. You'll see.
This is the Punjabi form of the game, sometimes called circle kabaddi. The sport got its name from the requirement that players hold their breath on the opponent's side of the field, often chanting kabaddi, kabaddi, kabaddi to prove they're not breathing. But in more recent years, that rule has been replaced with a 30-second time limit, which has been further reduced by some tournament organizers to 28 seconds.
No, stay put here. Watch it. Sorry, watch.
And then that was probably about 15, 20 seconds. You still got 10 seconds to run back.
Yeah. Today, Amo says, the guys are trying to take it easy. They need to practice hard enough to get ready for the upcoming season, which runs from April through October, but not so hard that they'll get hurt. But it really doesn't look like they're being all that careful. In an especially intense raid, the stopper wraps his legs around the raider's neck in what's called the scissors hold and gets dragged across the grass 5 or 6 feet before releasing his grip. I wonder out loud if a raider is permitted to drag a stopper all the way back to his side of the field.
They do that sometimes.
Really?
Yeah, if they have to, they'll carry the guys. They'll have the scissors on them, they'll pick them up, flip them on their back. They do whatever they can. They'll drag you. Like, these guys don't really want to get hurt too much out here in practice, but if somebody would grab their ankle and, you know, they really got a good grip on it, they'll try to kick out. If they can't kick out, they'll just try to drag them if they can. If they're heavier.
After about 45 minutes, the team has had enough. They're tired and bruised. They've been bickering for the last half hour, which I learn is not entirely uncommon. There are two brothers on this team and a bunch of cousins. Usually, 23-year-old Sonny Condola's father is on hand to act as coach and peacekeeper.
My dad's here. We're doing way a lot. We should be practicing more longer. We would have been sprinting more. We've been running backwards, frog jumps. We've been doing push-up. He's been trying to get me ready for season and stuff. So he wakes me up 6 in the morning, takes me running to for 8 o'clock. Then he's like, all right, go ahead and go to school.
So far, that dedication has paid off. Sonny is one of the better-known raiders in Northern California. For the past 3 years, he's been named the U.S. team that plays at the Kabaddi World Cup near Toronto. He's traveled to England, New York, Chicago, and Seattle to play, with his expenses paid by the teams that recruit him. But kabaddi is a tough sport, and injuries are common. Last year, Sonny tore his MCL. He's also messed up his ankles and needs to have surgery on his toes. On the kabaddi field, he's seen players with dislocated arms, fingers, and shoulders. Sonny's father might be the coach during practice, but he has another role during matches.
When we're in the tournaments and stuff, he's always praying. Like if I go raid, he makes sure he prays I don't get hurt. And my brother, if he tries to stop something, he prays that he don't get no hurt, because there's a 50-50 chance that he might get hurt.
For those who play kabaddi, sports and religion seem to be linked. Practices are scheduled around visits to the temple. And when I request an interview with Surinder Singh, the vice chairman of the Sikh Sports Association, he asks me to meet him at Gurdwara Sahib Fremont, one of the largest Sikh temples in the world.
Should I let me take you inside?
Yes.
First of all, one thing which we do is we cover our heads, so you will cover your head also.
Surinder meets me on the front steps at 10 on a Sunday morning. The Gurdwara has been open since 2, and members come and go as they please all day long. Just inside the doors, Surinder shows me a box of colorful scarves to be used by visitors. He picks out an embroidered dark yellow silk and makes sure I like the color before helping me tie it around my head.
So we will go inside, and we have our holy guru inside.
The temple is a peaceful place. Adults and children kneel on the ground while a priest sings hymns from the Sikh holy book. We kneel and listen, and from time to time, Surinder leans over and offers a translation. The oldest gurdwara in the U.S. was built in Stockton, not far from here, almost 100 years ago. And Sikhs have been living in California since the 1800s. But Surrender says it's still important to keep traditions alive, like kabaddi.
Absolutely. See, the richness of the world is different communities, different languages, different sports, different colors, different cultures. So that is what makes this world beautiful. And kabaddi is one part of that game of a community, and it is key, it is critical that all of these things are encouraged and supported.
To me, the peacefulness of the temple and the tenets of Sikhism that Surrender has been talking about seem like a sharp contrast to the violence of kabaddi, where almost anything goes when a raider and stopper are locked in battle. But Surrender disagrees.
No, it is not violent. I would say, violent is totally different where you would like to hurt somebody and so on and so forth. Kabaddi, actually, it just is a game which shows strength, just like wrestling. Wrestling, I don't consider it to be violent. It's much less violent than boxing.
The Sikh Sports Association's main concern isn't preserving sports like kabaddi. Their main goal is to provide a bridge between immigrant parents who might be struggling and their Americanized children who might be spending too much time at home, watching TV or worse, being tempted by drugs or gangs.
U.S. is a big place. It could be an intimidating place. It could be a place where people may not be able to figure it out how things happen for many, many years. So what happens is the American kids, they are talking about games and their parents are taking to them to the leagues and the sports and so on and so forth. And the Indian, Punjabi, other Sikh kids, they feel, how come our parents are not doing that? It's not that they don't love their children. It's just that they do not know how to leverage the system, how to make use of the system.
Surrender says teams from non-Sikh communities will also be participating in the Sikh Sports Association's first annual games. And like the players I met in Manteca and Union City, Surrender hopes that more people from more cultures will try the sport of kabaddi.
It's a game. Game has no bounds. Game has no constraints. Any person in the world would like to play any game should be able to play. So is kabaddi.
For Only a Game, I'm Karen Given.
Here now to discuss the week's sports news is the gentleman we refer to as the real sports guy, Charlie Pierce. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, Bill.
On Monday, David Halberstam was killed in an automobile accident. Does it seem to you just a little ironic that so many people are celebrating the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist who reported from Vietnam for his sports-related books?
He really did touch a lot of people in our little corner of the universe. And did so with the thoroughness and the intellect that he brought to everything. I, like everyone else, have a David Halberstam story, but mine goes back to 1974, when I was a junior, as you know, at Marquette University in Milwaukee, and our dean of our journalism school was a man named George Reedy, who used to work for Lyndon Johnson. And Halberstam wanted to interview Reedy as part of his avalanche of research for the book that became The Powers That Be.
Mm-hmm.
And Reedy blackmailed him. He wouldn't give him an interview unless David Halberstam gave the speech at our annual journalism banquet. So 1974 was also the year the Milwaukee Bucks were playing the Boston Celtics, and I was heavily invested in the Boston Celtics around town with money I didn't have. So I was rather on edge. And at the pre-party, when David Halberstam was surrounded by all these earnest journalism school people and some of them somewhat drone-like, asking him about Vietnam and civil rights and this and that, and I walked by, I had a Celtics button on my lapel, and I walked by to the kitchen to where the beer was located, and this arm came shooting out, chung, and grabbed my arm and said, "Who do you think they draft? I think that Steak'em kid from Providence is probably good." And we spent the next hour talking about the 1974 championship series, which was ongoing at the time, who the Celtics should draft, and about halfway through this, a bell went off in my head, and I said, "Damn, this guy really knows this stuff." And of course, since then, you know, this was prior to his ever having written a sports book of any kind. And, you know, David made himself quite willingly a part of this strange little world. I think the notion that people from government all the way to sports and sports journalism testified to how much he meant to them and how much he touched them is a measure of a life well lived.
As of August 1st, college coaches will no longer be allowed to use text messaging as a recruiting tool. They'll be crippled, I'm sure. Does this leave a large loophole for recruitment by means of fight song ringtones?
I have no idea. You talk, I mean, I've always said that college recruiting brigandage operates a lot like political campaign finances. No matter where you stop it in one place, it pops up in another. Text messaging is now banned. I presume somewhere, an NCAA investigator found a text message on a kid's BlackBerry that said, the $100,000 is under the car we just parked in your driveway.
The Los Angeles Lakers, having dropped the first two games of their first-round playoff series with the Phoenix Suns, employed a different strategy in Game 3, and it worked. What'd they do?
Let the best players score the points. Let the best player take all the shots.
That was it.
Let the best player try to win it by himself. 95-89. I don't think it's going to mean anything in the long term. I mean, Phoenix isn't going to score 89 points in a game the rest of the playoffs, probably. It was a big win. It was a big home win for Kobe, but this series is pretty much over.
Charlie, as the NBA playoffs began, the league honored Sam Mitchell of the Toronto Raptors as the coach of the year. Do you suppose Doc Rivers was disappointed?
Now, be kind. This was a good win. I mean, Toronto won 47 games this year. That's the most they've ever won. He's got them into the playoffs. He got Chris Bosh, largely through Sam Mitchell's work and obviously Chris Bosh's own work, into become one of the league's premier players. This was a terrific honor for him and for a franchise that's often overlooked mostly by the people in its own country.
Golfer John Daly made a TV commercial, which, courtesy of CBS, we will never see. What's the problem?
Well, he's been, as you know, battling an alcohol problem his entire career. He made a spot for a brand of golf balls where he's singing in a bar with a whole bunch of people drinking what appears to be beer around him. CBS is up on its high horse now, grooving on the whole Imus thing. Max Fly, on the other hand, argued that it was only ginger ale in there anyway,
as
Dean Martin used to use apple juice, as we know, on stage. But this is apparently not good enough for CBS. It really shouldn't be good enough for Daly either. He should know better.
I'll give you just a moment now to pull on your Mr. NASCAR cap.
In my case, it's overalls, but go ahead.
Very good. Now, tell me whether we should all feel good about Jeff Gordon driving a victory lap while waving a banner honoring the late Dale Earnhardt.
You know, we should, but neither one of us is a Jeff Gordon fan or a Dale Earnhardt fan. This is rather like the Yankees deciding to celebrate a world championship by carrying a Red Sox banner around Fenway Park or Yankee Stadium. Jeff Gordon is the pretty boy whose daddy bought him a race car and didn't come up the old-fashioned way the way number three did. So Jeff Gordon waving a number three out his window, no matter if he did it burning incense and chanting Gregorian chant, is going to tick some people off.
We should mention, by the way, that the occasion for this event was Jeff Gordon tying one of Dale Earnhardt's most important NASCAR records.
Yeah, 76 wins, and I honestly think he was trying to honor the guy, but there's no appeasing some people.
I know you're a big Curt Schilling fan, Charlie.
I am.
And this week, some question was raised about the red substance that appeared on Mr. Schilling's sock during Game 6, the American League Championship Series back in 2004. According to Baltimore Orioles play-by-play guy Gary Thorne, the substance may have been paint rather than blood. We have DNA testing to look forward to here.
Well, so I'm glad it didn't come to DNA testing or carbon-14 dating or something. since this is let's let Charlie talk about his life edition of Only a Game. I met my wife, as you probably know, when we were both covering the Shroud of Turin Research Conference in New London, Connecticut in 1981. I know what happens if you say something irreverent about sacred pieces of cloth. They come and get you. And they're coming from Mirabelle and Thorne. I guarantee it.
David Beckham, eat your heart out, because a Croat soccer player is currently rejoicing in abundance. Any chance other leagues around the world use Zagora FC's model for compensating their best athletes?
No. No. As long as none of them come back with war brides. No. Yeah, there's a soccer player from Croatia has scored 16 times this year. And he was unaware that his sponsor, who happened to be a local shepherd, and you got to love any sports where you can refer to the owner as a local shepherd, had promised one sheep for every goal scored by a defender. The footballer in question is not real sure where he will keep his 16 sheep and counting, I might add. But I suspect his family's not going to starve for Easter dinner for the next few years.
And finally, Charlie, lots of people have run lots of marathons for charity, and good on them, but a fellow named Greg Billingham has apparently introduced a new wrinkle into that activity.
He's running in slow motion. He's taking one step every five or six seconds. Mm. And I guess he's doing this for charity, but he's also reenacting the climactic scenes and all the race scenes in Chariots of Fire. I wonder if he's got that tongue swinging back and forth.
Charlie Pierce writes for the Boston Sunday Globe magazine. He joins me each week at this time on Only a Game. Thank you, Charlie.
Don't pay me in sheep.
Thanks for listening to Only a Game. Please check your local listings for the NPR station nearest you to carry our show, and please visit our website, onlyagame.org.